flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Mark Schlereth is going to join us at 12:35. Looking forward to talking to Mark. Ben Standing is with us now, and as promised, after Ben, I'll play what Jason Kelce said about Jalen Hurts. I think it's interesting. I think the Jalen Hurts conversation actually is just interesting overall. The dude has come up big in the biggest games for Philadelphia, and yet I think he's minimized by most, including, by the way, heading into the game on Sunday, by me. I didn't think, Ben, he was playing very well. I didn't think their offense seemed capable. I thought it was disjointed. And then we had the injury to boot. And yet, the defense couldn't stop them anytime they were on the field for all intents and purposes. I'm just curious, as you look ahead to next Sunday without our team in it, do you think they're going to beat Kansas City? Do you think he'll play well and they'll play well and win?
Look, he's, like you said, he's got the experience. It's not like he's a bad quarterback. It's just the expectations get raised when you sign the contract he signed and obviously was in the Super Bowl. I haven't been the biggest of fans, but he played very well in that game. But, you know, look, Saquon Barkley going for 60-yard touchdown run on the first play. I mean, it felt like Washington was playing uphill from there. And, I think, look, they just have a lot of weapons, you know, from the offensive line, the receivers, obviously the running back. So as good as Jalen Hurts may be, and he's paid like he is, he's the rare guy that has a lot around him and doesn't have to be sort of the star to get that thing to work the way Mahomes does, the way, Jaden was this year.
What are you going to do this weekend?
Wow.
Sometimes you have the oddest of delayed responses. You had to think that one through. I'm asking you the question because we don't have football to discuss.
I'm with you. I was trying to think. I was like, all right, that's right. I'm not automatically going to a stadium. My cousin's nephew plays basketball for Haverford, and they're playing at Johns Hopkins on Saturday, so I'm probably going to that.
My cousin's nephew. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know.
Who's Haverford playing? Hopkins?
Johns Hopkins, yeah.
D3 college basketball is awesome to watch. There was a time way back in the day I called a bunch of D3 college basketball games. Catholic University games. So it's over now. I know we talked a lot about the game on Monday, but what's going to stand out more than anything else other than the obvious, which is Jaden?
From this season? I just think it's, I mean, hopefully it appears to be that they got back on the path to normalcy. You know, I don't know. None of us can know whether they're going to win Super Bowls or make another NFC Championship game anytime soon or anything, but at least it was confirmation that whatever is going to happen will be done under normal professional circumstances rather than, you know, the clown show that was going on for the last 20 years. I mean, even in the years where they had some success, you just knew that the ceiling was capped because of, you know, what's going on in the ownership group, et cetera. And here that's not the case. On top of it, you have Adam Peters, who looks like, you know, one of the rising stars of general managers in that front office. You know, Dan Quinn had already taken the team to the Super Bowl, got within one game this year, even though this was clearly not the most talented team. So I think to me, like, and also, you know, what that means for the fan base. I mean, just based on anecdotal things I'm aware of, like, you know, I mean, so many people who are just like, I'm out. I've made this joke before, but it's for real. Like, people would tell me, friends and family, they don't read my articles because they're sick of this team. And now they're at least saying, hey, you know, I read what you read, you know, whatever, good or bad. And that type of, it's all of that. The people are just like, okay, I'm ready to believe again. And, you know, that seemed impossible even a couple years ago.
Yeah. I agree with that. Look, we're going to have so much time in the coming weeks to look ahead and, you know, discuss what we're hearing and what we're what people are reporting, including people like you, about what they'll be doing. I don't want to leave what was such a magical season this year. And, you know, there were like so many jump out of your seat scream moments during the course of the year. I think the Terry McLaurin catch against Cincinnati was the first one. Obviously, number two was the Hail Mary. I think the 86-yard throw to Terry McLaurin was about as shocking as anything, because how could the Cowboys, with basically no time left, give up that play? The two-point conversion that failed, the touchdown pass to beat the Eagles, the touchdown pass in overtime to beat Atlanta. I mean, the Mariota touchdown pass at the end of the Dallas game, the doink. Like, you could write a book just on the endings in this season. Like, would you rank, if you were ranking the endings, if Hail Mary's number one, would you agree that that's number one?
Yeah, I mean, for pure, you know, holy crap moment, yeah. I mean, a Hail Mary is pretty hard to beat, but on top of it, it was, like, fully defining that this season was off the rails, that this was not just some run of the mill season.
What would be number two?
I mean, the catch against Dallas was pretty shocking, except for the fact that we know what happened immediately afterwards.
Right. Shocking.
I mean, yeah, in a different way. You know, I just go back. Like, I think there's like three stages. There's the Jaden pass to Terry McLaurin in the end zone at Cincinnati. A game I fully expected Washington to lose. Bengals were 0-2. You know, Washington on the road Monday night, rookie quarterback. You know, it's not going to be all, sunshine and roses here. And yet, this kid goes in there, wins the game, and does it in that dramatic, or just that spectacular fashion. That was, to me, when I was like, okay, this team is actually pretty good. They're better than I think. When they beat the Bears, you're like, okay, this season there's something really like magical here. And then I would say when they beat the Eagles in overtime, despite five turnovers, Jaden throwing five touchdown passes, is when I was like, okay, this team can actually do something interesting. And then I will say the last one for me was when Jaden basically by himself in the fourth quarter in overtime beat Atlanta. That was when I was like, okay, this kid isn't just having a good year. He's not just good. This is elite. He took the ball over the way you imagine your superstars doing it. So I think those were sort of for me like the markers of how this season went.
Yeah, you know, the Bears game is such an interesting game because they had, you know, the week before they had destroyed the Panthers after losing to the Ravens, which was a good bounce back, and you know. the Bears had been playing better heading into that game. They had won a couple in a row, including the game, I think it was in London against the Jags. Washington won that game not playing well. You know, they didn't play that game well. And they had it in control for much of it, and then all of a sudden, Chicago goes nuts in the third quarter. It was the DeAndre Swift touchdown run that completely changed that game from, you know, 60 yards out or whatever it was. And then all of a sudden, Caleb Williams started to make plays. And that actually would have been a really devastating loss. And that's what it was looking like, you know, in the moment. Like, it's funny because we've talked about all these games so many times, but I feel like that Bears game was so crucial. Like, the Panthers were terrible. The Bears weren't that great, but you had it in control, and then you lost it in the fourth quarter because you couldn't get Chicago off the field, and it came down to a Hail Mary. Yeah, that was a lot of, like, wow, what's going on here? What kind of season is this?
Also, Jaden gets his rib hurt the week before, gets knocked out in the first quarter, and we weren't even sure he was going to play. For him to then have played, and yeah, you're like you said, it wasn't their best game, but he still had a pretty good game in general. And then the Hail Mary, you're like, wow, this kid is tough. He's playing, and this is what's going on. I mean, you know, luck or not, there's sometimes things like that just feel utterly magical. So for him to have come in, and I won't call it the Jordan flu game, but, you know, we're like, well, hey, now you got to play. And then he does that. You're like, oh, my Lord, this is crazy.
Yeah, I had to look back the other day just to find out how it was that he threw for 326 in the game and rushed for 52 yards in the game. And they only had 12 points until the final play of the game, and needed, you know, Tyreek Stevenson to be mocking fans to pull off a shocking win. It was kind of a weird game overall for them. They just they got penalized a little bit. They didn't convert on third down as much, and even though the yardage was there, the points weren't there in that game. I think right now, before we get into in future discussions, get into, you know, the needs and the availability out there in free agency, et cetera, and then start talking about the draft, of course we will. I think the number one thing that I was hoping would happen has already happened, and that is Cliff Kingsbury's coming back. So I'd ask you, was there a legit opportunity for him, or was it more about him just saying no to any kind of legitimate opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, as far as we know, you know, from what I'd heard and been reported, that the two teams that showed interest or wanted to interview him were the Bears and the Saints. Now, if the Washington had lost to Tampa Bay in that first game, you know, then who knows, maybe things could have elevated a bit more. But you know, when you look at this cycle and the seven teams that were involved, only the Bears and Patriots had, you know, an interesting enough quarterback that you might think, okay, like, if I have, you know, because, look, he's getting paid, Cliff is still getting paid by the Cardinals, right? He's got this opportunity here going into year two with Jaden Daniels after what they just accomplished. Seeing that out doesn't seem like an unreasonable thought. So, you know, the situation would have to be pretty good unless somebody threw you tons of money. And, you know, he obviously, you know, Ben Johnson was getting that treatment this cycle. So when stories got put out there this week, hey, he's definitely staying. I mean, I guess I was kind of like, well, no duh. The Saints is probably the worst of the seven jobs. Like, I can't imagine that was ever a thing in Cliff Kingsbury's mind. They have no quarterback, terrible cap space. They've just been sort of a mid team. They don't have a top five pick to get a quarterback, you know, likely. So there's nothing attractive about that job. So yeah, to me, like, unless they had lost to Tampa and the Bears thing got interesting, which seems unlikely based on how Ben Johnson went, that I don't think he was really in the mix for any of these things. Again, does Jacksonville get more interesting? They've got Trevor Lawrence. Can you talk yourself into that? Maybe, but I, you know, seems unlikely.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep.
Graybar does that.
Gearing up for the big game? We are too. Join us on the Moth Podcast for a special episode dedicated to hilarious true stories about football, family, and growing up.
I loved Franco Harris so much that in 1975, I invited him to my bar mitzvah. And he was so cool that he actually sent me a telegram.
Each week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, and above all, true. Find the Moth Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
After Jaden, in terms of the setup for 2024, drafting Jaden, could you make the case that hiring Kliff was the second most important thing that happened?
So we're not including Peters?
Fair enough. I'm not counting Peters and Quinn. I'm talking about once you had Peters and Quinn in terms of putting together a staff, putting together a roster, and they flipped it significantly. What was the second most, you know, important acquisition after Daniels?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, the over the course of the season, in not just Jaden Daniels as an individual, the offense was easily the most impressive part of the team for most of the year. There was the stretch. Or was Jaden hurt? Was he not hurt still? Where the offense kind of dipped a bit. But beyond that, the offense was just, you know, look, I mean, the first month of the year, all we're talking about is his insane efficiency records he's setting, the punter not punting for three games. And obviously Jaden's a lot of that, but it's also Kliff Kingsbury not only having a system that he was able to modify for what was going on here, but the ability to help to be in partnership with Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin and trying to figure out how to make this work. You know, clearly that this whole staff, you know, was, you know, different pieces, right? You have Brian Johnson coming from the Eagles where he had been an OC. Anthony Lynn's been a former head coach. Tavita Pritchard was a holdover, all that. And somehow they seemingly made this work pretty seamlessly, like no sense of there's any issues. And, you know, the result was Jaden Daniels and this offense executing at a high level. So, yeah, I can go with that for Kingsbury. And, you know, admittedly, I think it was a very – maybe not polarizing choice, but it was like, really? Because there was that whole Kliff, you know, second half of his team's decline narrative that was out there. And, you know, the Arizona thing didn't end great. So there were definitely questions about it, but he, you know, certainly lived up to, you know, any realistic feeling in their momentum.
You know, when you think back to kind of a year ago, shortly after Quinn was hired, in terms of the offseason and the reaction to every hire and every addition, the only addition that I don't think was controversial or didn't have naysayers, look, because Jaden had some naysayers. There were a lot of people that would have preferred a different quarterback. There were people that would have preferred they trade back and build up the offensive line and keep Sam Howell. But I think the only, you know, I was thinking about this last night, the only addition made during the offseason that didn't have any pushback to it whatsoever was the hiring of Adam Peters. Because he was the number one GM candidate and Washington got him. Can you think of anybody else that didn't have skepticism attached to the signature?
That's a good question. I mean, probably not. Like, obviously they didn't have any, like, you know, break the bank free agents. I mean, I think like Frankie Louvu in general seemed to be a pretty popular one because it got, you know, they needed that edge pass rusher, but he also wasn't, you know, not like they signed Michael Parsons or, you know, one of these, you know, truly viewed dominant defensive ends. But, you know, I think that one's pretty good. But other than that, you're right. I mean, you know, even Mikey Sanders, still second-round pick, turned out to be a pretty good player. But, you know, the size questions, they had traded away the pick that the Eagles took to get Cooper DeJean, so there's automatically this comparison. So, yeah, there was things going on there. And, you know, maybe Tyler Biadasz. Can we say that one? Because I think everybody kind of was like, oh, good, a center who actually plays. Good. This is good.
I guess. Yeah, I mean, right, that's fine. There were a lot of signings that actually just didn't have much of a reaction, so I guess they would all qualify for, you know, no resistance. I think I remember being excited about Louvu, and I think people who had followed in, you know, more than just our team understood that he was definitely an up-and-comer, and the deal seemed perfectly reasonable. But yeah, I'll give you Biotish as well. Look, the Sandristil pick was exciting, but remember, it came after people were scratching their heads as to why they would take a defensive tackle with that their first second round pick.
Right, neither of those guys was an offensive tackle, which is what everybody was hoping for. Obviously, they ended up getting one in Coleman, but not the same. Not the same situation at all, but I still think one of the crazier things is, you know, they signed, you know, roughly 30 free agents, but really they probably was closer to like a 20 number in terms of guys that were, like, there were 24 new veterans on the team week one, and of all those guys, almost every single one of them hit to some degree. Like Mike Davis feels like the only one who was kind of because he got knocked out of the rotation by week two. Everybody else, I think largely had a moment or two, if not, was a real starter. It's really, so much had to go right this year. And if you play the simulation 100 times, you know, I don't know if they're going to, I don't think they're winning 12 games very often, but they did in this scenario. And, you know, just kind of everything worked. And, you know, got to give obviously Peters and Quinn a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking through the list of free agent signings from last year. I mean, players that, you know, barely even got mentioned as additions. A guy like Michael Walker, who ended up playing very well in special teams. You know, Zacchaeus would be an example. Even Igben Ogeni. I mean, I don't think anybody knew that he could potentially be out there as much as any corner on the team. You mentioned Mike Davis. Obviously, the biggest bust would be Brandon McManus because of what happened, but it's not like they paid him, you know, a lot of money. It was a one-year deal worth, what, $5 million or whatever it was. They hit on so many. So many ended up making significant contributions. Wagner, Ertz, Eckler, Mariota, you know, every opportunity he got, not to mention behind the scenes. Fowler. Luvu, obviously. You mentioned Biotish and Chin. Armstrong. I think in many ways Armstrong was one of the underappreciated players of the season and definitely the postseason.
One thing that's funny, and a buddy of mine who listens to you pointed this out, and I was talking about this a little bit on my podcast the other day. If we go individually on the defensive side, it's going to be pretty hard to figure out who you would give the red pen to.
I know.
And yet, they were terrible against the run the whole season. And that's the part that's so interesting. And I do wonder, like, if we have to be realistic and start talking more about the scheme. Or something doesn't make sense. How could it be that all the players we view as been pretty good, and yet they were just run over week after week after week? And, you know, the secondary, by basic numbers, yards allowed, looks to be pretty good. But I think we all are realistic that, you know, that one of those cornerback spots for most of the year was getting picked on or not working out at all, which is why they went, they cut Forbes, they benched essentially St. Juice, they benched Davis, eventually trade for Lattimore, and it wasn't so great for him. So that's what I'm like, it's weird, like, how is it, so it's not like they were dominant in the back end, and yet they couldn't stop the run. I don't know, it's just odd that it never worked out, and yet again, we're not sitting here going, boy, they really have to, you know, they need an edge rusher, but we're not saying, boy, they got to get rid of this guy, this guy, this guy.
I mean, I think some fans would say, you know, it's time to move on from the, you know, the longtime defensive tackles. But no, you're right. I mean, it's sat here every week. I'm like, God, I think Luvu's good. I mean, Luvu and Wagner are all pros. They made the all-pro team. I think that, you know, Dorrance Armstrong's not bad. I think that, you know, Fowler Jr. is a good pass rusher. I love Chin and Martin. I love Sandristil. And then it's like, yeah, but something's not adding up here because, you know, I just went through it. Basically, the elite backs that they faced averaged 6 yards a carry against them this year. So something isn't there, and we haven't really focused on scheme and X's and O's and Joe Witt Jr. specifically. I don't, you know, it's funny, everybody that would know expert-wise, experience-wise, also comes up with, you know, their hands up in the air going, I don't know why. The players aren't bad. The scheme's not terrible. I don't know why. So maybe it'll completely change with the same players next year. Although I do think at the very least, one thing that they did not have, they did not have an edge. They did not have a defensive end run stopper. That's the one thing that you can say clearly did not exist on this roster.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, defensive end is one spot where they can do, they need to upgrade. The one spot opposite Armstrong is kind of a hole at this point. You know, Cleveland Farrell and Dante Fowler are both free agents, so we'll see where that goes. I mean, Fowler may come back, but you know, I think he's a good example of what we're talking about. 10.5 sacks, that's probably like seven sacks more than anybody should have realistically thought. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating slightly, but not much, except that, you know, Dante Fowler against the run is not spectacular. You know, he played the fewest amount of snaps by percentage in the NFC Championship game than he had all year against a team with Saquon Barkley. I don't think that's a coincidence.
That's not a coincidence. And they didn't have enough third and longs, which were obvious passing situations.
Right. And I had Logan Paulson on this past week. He was kind enough to be with me all throughout the playoffs, and we talked about this, and I just flat out said, and we sort of capped the season, what happened? Why could they just not stop the run at all? I mean, what's the deal? Scheme, or what's the deal? And, you know, obviously there's a lot to get into, including, look, Dan Quinn's teams, we don't talk about it in this way because we're focused on this team, but Dan Quinn's teams the last few years have gotten blown out in their last game of the playoffs, and getting run on was a huge factor. Those are different teams, but I'm just saying there's something to wonder about it from a scheme standpoint. But their other part is the edge rushers that they have, and that includes, like, say, Luvu. They are the good players. They obviously work for the team, but they are also a lot of risk takers. You know, as fun as it is to watch Luvu dive over the pile, it also means you're exposing yourself to the other team doing, you know, if you're wrong, you're really wrong, you know. Because you're just left your feet, and Fowler is going for the pass rush far more than he is typically, looking to stop the run. The Saquon Barkley play, he was his lane that got wide open. He sort of got tangled up in the line, but nonetheless, he didn't react to it great. And then Barkley shoots up the hole, and there you go. So yeah, that is an area they need to clearly improve on. But like I said, if we told just average people, hey, you want them to bring back Dante Fowler and everybody on the line, yeah.
Yeah.
Do that. Great.
I agree.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, and the other part of it is most of the time that they got run on, they still won the game somehow. I got to run. Thanks. I'll talk to you later.
See you, man.
When I come back, I want you to hear what Jason Kelce said about Jalen Hurts. Mark Schlereth will join us after that. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team 980.com.